This week, college students at Florida A&M University in Tallahassee rallied over the death of teenager Trayvon Martin. The Congressional Black Caucus has asked the Justice Department to investigate Martin's death as a possible hate crime. 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was watching the NBA All-Star Game at a house within a gated community in Florida last month. At halftime, he walked to a nearby 7-Eleven to buy Skittles. He was on his way back to the house when George Zimmerman noticed him and called 911.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Police told Zimmerman they were on their way and that he should stay in his car. Instead, Zimmerman followed Trayvon. What happened next is unclear, but soon after, a neighbor called 911 to say she'd heard a gunshot. Trayvon was discovered dead with a bullet to his chest. Zimmerman says he was acting in self-defense. He has yet to be charged with anything. However, a federal investigation is now underway, and it'll be handled by the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division and the FBI. Joining us now, James Peterson, Director of Africana Studies at Lehigh University and Associate Professor of English. He also blogs for the Huffington Post. And Paul Butler, a former federal prosecutor, law professor at George Washington University and author of Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Good morning.
It's great to be here.
Paul, I hope that first you can explain this Stand Your Ground law in Florida, which is what at the moment is protecting George Zimmerman from being charged with anything. How does this work?
So, Celeste, normally when someone claims self-defense, you look to see whether they could have gone, retreated to a place of safety. So, in other words, if you are confronted with deadly force, in most states, what you have to do is to go someplace where you can be safe rather than use deadly force in response. In Florida, the law is different. In Florida, you get to stand your ground, which means you don't have to run, which means that you can shoot right then.
But how is that complicated by the stories that are now emerging? I'm referring to, say, the cell phone call with one of his friends in which he describes the man following me and she's telling him to run. Does that also offer protection? I mean, does the person have to be coming at you?
Well, it's complicated by another fact of self-defense law, which is that if you started the fight, you're not later able to claim self-defense. That's called the initial aggressor rule. So what law enforcement officials have to decide here is who started this fight. So if, in fact, Mr. Zimmerman started the fight, that is, if he's the first person to use or threaten deadly force, then he won't be able to claim protection by the Stand Your Ground law. But if, you know, if Trayvon, if he was the first person to threaten Mr. Zimmerman, then Mr. Zimmerman might have a defense.
Here we have an excerpt from George Zimmerman's 911 call reporting on Trayvon Martin.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
That is the 911 operator telling him not to follow Trayvon, but all indications are that he did, in fact, follow him.
And Celeste, it's important to understand that following him or even getting out of the car to see what he was up to, that doesn't mean he can't claim self-defense. The only way that he wouldn't have self-defense is if he actually was the first person to take out his gun and threaten to use force against Trayvon.
That's Paul Butler, former federal prosecutor, law professor at George Washington University. Also with us, James Peterson of Lehigh University. And I wonder, James, what you think about the Congressional Black Caucus and their demand that this be investigated as a hate crime. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with it. If you listen closely to the content of the 9/11 or the 911 calls, it seems pretty clear to me that Mr. Zimmerman's actions are based upon the fact that Trayvon was black. He thinks he's suspicious because he's black and wearing a hoodie. He thinks he's not supposed to be there because he's black. And he thinks he's engaged in some kind of strange criminal activity, basically, because he's black. Now, whether or not he shot him because he's black, I think is indicated by the fact that he made all those other decisions based upon the fact that he profiled this young man in the very last few minutes of his life.
Help us to understand why, though, this causes so much consternation among the African-American community. I listened to his parents at one point commenting that, you know, when you move into a gated community, it's because you want to keep your kids safe. And now it turns out that moving him to a gated community made him less safe. What does that mean?
Well, it means, I mean, there's, so the pain in the African-American community around the Trayvon murder case, you know, goes back into our history. You see a lot of people making an analogy to Emmett Till, but we don't have to go back that far to understand the ways in which not just the police institution, but institutional racism itself is killing young black people. So if you take, you know, Butler's book talks about the prison industrial complex, which is one of those institutional ways in which racism always manifests itself. But if we look at all the cases of police brutality, if you look at Sean Bell, you look at Oscar Grant, you go back to Abner Louima, Amadou Diallo, there are so many cases of excessive force being used against innocent teenagers. And those are just the ones that of the names that went national. There's a whole bunch of these young men and sometimes women who are being killed or being detained based upon being racially profiled. And we have no recourse for that so far. So this is why we need the federal government to get involved. This is why we're calling for the Sanford Police Chief to step down. This is why Reverend Al Sharpton is going to be there today or tomorrow to raise more awareness around these issues, because this is systemic. It's been intermittent but continuous. And the bottom line here is that we're more than frustrated. We're devastated when these things continue to happen, because it really reflects some of the more evil aspects of our own society.
I mean, it's definitely a tragedy. I can't even imagine what his parents are going through. This is a kid that was armed with Skittles and iced tea. But let me go back to Paul Butler, a law professor at George Washington University. According to the director of the National Neighborhood Watch Program, there's more than 20,000 registered watch groups in the nation. George Zimmerman, the accused shooter, was not a member of any of them. Does that change the circumstances at all?
You know, not really, because in the eyes of the law, these neighborhood watch groups don't have any special powers. They can't do any more than a regular citizen, and they certainly aren't police officers. What it does suggest, though, is that Mr. Zimmerman didn't have any kind of training at all, that, again, he wasn't different than, you know, any kind of neighborhood busybody, quite frankly, walking the streets or driving, patrolling his neighborhood. I'm trying to see what he can see. And Celeste, I'll tell you, some of the people who do this have these kind of law enforcement fantasies. They want to be in situations where they can feel like a hero or feel like they prevented a crime. And it's, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it can lead to circumstances, tragedies like this one.
And I should mention that the actual manual that comes for the National Neighborhood Watch Program says, and I'm quoting here, it should be emphasized to members they do not possess police powers and they shall not carry weapons or pursue vehicles. So let me go back to you, James Peterson. Short of George Zimmerman being arrested, how do you then deal with this on a national basis to hopefully prevent such a thing from happening again?
Well, I think first he's got to be arrested. We've got to see some justice in this particular case. Secondly, I think the Justice Department has got to look at all of these stand your ground laws and look at all the different self-defense positions that have been taken in these stand your ground related murders. And we've got to figure out if this hypervigilantism is more systemic than we think it is. Thirdly, we've got to raise more national awareness about the ways in which institutional racism infects our criminal justice system. And in this case, what's happening is there's a bleed off. It's bleeding over into not just vigilantism, but the neighborhood watch sensibility. So when we have institutional racism, we're essentially endorsing things like racial profiling and the kind of attitude that Mr. Zimmerman shows in the calls and in his interactions with Trayvon right up in the few minutes before he passed away or before he was killed.
James Peterson is Director of Africana Studies at Lehigh University, Associate Professor of English, and blogs for the Huffington Post. Last question for you, Paul Butler. A 2010 study showed that justifiable homicides tripled in Florida since this Stand Your Ground law went into effect. What are the chances that it could be struck down?
Well, you know, these laws are very popular. It's kind of this macho ethos that if somebody attacks you, man, you don't have to run. You can shoot them right there. And again, our criminal justice system, as James says, is often infected by these, racist and now sexist ideas that really, at the end of the day, make us less safe.
That's Paul Butler, former federal prosecutor, law professor at George Washington University, and author of Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. Thanks to both of you.
Great to be here.
We'd love to hear a view from some folks in Florida who are our listeners. So what do you think of this? Do you have an alternative view? Do you think that the stand your ground laws are appropriate in any sense? What do you think of the coverage that's taken place about this story? We'd love to hear from you at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can post to our site, thetakeaway.org. If you want to get an early jump on any of the conversations on the program, be a part of our listener response network. You can sign up to get our texts. You'll get one a day where we ask you a question featured on the next day's show, and your voice becomes part of our on-air conversation. Just text the word START to 69866. That's START to 69866. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.